Welcome, dear listeners, to this week's episode of Afternoon Satsang. It's PM 15 Radio Sai joining you again with Arvind. And again, we are going to continue our Ramakatha Rasvahini series. As always, we begin by offering our most humble pranams at Bhagwan's lotus feet and at the feet of Lord Hanuman, who is ever present wherever the name and the glory of Lord Rama is sung. And also, as always, let us begin by taking this sweet and beautiful name of Lord Rama.
Shri Raghavam Dasharatatmajama Prame Sitapatim Raghukulanmaya Ratnadipam Ajanubhavum Aravindadalayataksham Ramam Nishachara Vinashakaram Namami Namami Namami
We are traveling along this beautiful story of Lord Sri Rama as narrated by Lord Satya Sai Rama. And last week we had reached that point where the brothers Rama and Lakshmana along with Mother Sita are happily and cozily settled in a hut on Chitrakuta, on the Mount Chitrakuta as suggested by sage. Now, you know, when we look at their life there, the way Swami writes it, is we can compare it to the kind of life that the students and boys had when Swami would take them to Kodaikanal possibly. Because there is apparently no agenda from morning till evening. Mm-hmm. It is just to spend the time in the divine company of Swami, right from Suprabhatam breakfast till the end of the day when you would have dinner and go to, you know, retire for the day. So it would therefore be so beautiful. And you know, Swami would, that was the time when Swami inculcated the students with a lot of pluses, if I can say. He would narrate stories, he would give them guidelines, he would explore the epics. And that was the same thing that was happening when Lord Rama settled along with Lakshmana and Sita at Chitrakuta. The entire day would be spent in the satsang of Rama, and just like the devotees would come to Kodaikanal for a few sessions, and in the same manner at Chitrakuta too, there would be some hermits and sages and people in that area who would come close to have satsang with Rama. So life went on in this beautiful manner. But what we promised last week is to take a break from this and focus, shift our focus to back to Ayodhya, where things were very, very different. That is where we had stopped last week. That is where we shall continue from this week.
And you know, when you look at this particular part, where especially where in the Rama, in the forest, where many of these sages come to the presence of Rama, I think it's many times happened in Swami's life also, when you feel that, you know, very, very unexpected circumstances brings people to Swami's presence.
Mm-hmm.
In that sense, if you see Lord Rama's life, I mean, if you look at it, he was an emperor. He was an emperor to be, at least in this particular situation. He's not even a king. He's not even a ruler of a small dominion. He's an emperor. And we can imagine how inaccessible he would have been otherwise to these denizens whom he is meeting in the course of this exile. You know, somebody like Guha or somebody like that boatman, or even the great sages, you might wonder, you would expect them to meet Lord Rama in some context or the other. But what about the other ashramites who are living in these, you know, in Panchavati and in Chitrakuta and all these places? It's impossible that they would have had an interaction with the avatar if not for eternal events such as these.
Mm.
And that is where, you know, many times you've emphasized this before, that the role an avatar comes to play gets fulfilled through these unexpected events in the life of an avatar, really.
Very well put, Prem. As you said, you know, it would be, this would not be an exact example, but it would almost be like somebody in India getting a chance to meet the Prime Minister, or somebody in America getting to meet the President and interact with him on a day-to-day basis.
Right.
You have to be at a high level yourself. I think in that sense, it is true over here also. To meet with the highest authority that Rama is, each one has to be at a higher level. The only difference is here, the level does not depend on your materialistic level, whether you're a king or whether you're a rich person. But I think it probably depends on the spiritual level, whether you are ready to receive what Rama has come to give. Only if a person is ready to receive what Rama has come to give, will he be attracted to the presence of Rama. So in that sense, I think it still holds true that you have to be of a certain level to be able to reach Rama. And what is that level? I think that comes through in the discussion later on. But in case we forget to go on to that point, let me just briefly narrate it here, where, you know, Swami has beautifully summarized that with his one statement where he says, if you need me, you deserve me. And that is what Rama displayed throughout his life also. The only qualification you need to be high on the list to meet God, to greet God and to spend time with him, is to need him with all of one's heart. If we need him so strongly, we get to meet him. And that is what we shall see in the Ramayana, where people in places inaccessible to Ayodhya, where nobody would have ever imagined that the prince, the emperor of the realm could possibly come there, to such places also, in the deepest of the Dandakaranya forest also, Rama goes and meets, which only further strengthens the truth, strengthens the conviction in the truth that if you need God, you deserve God. And that is the only qualification we have to rise in order to achieve God. That is what is exemplified by the Ramayana.
True, and in a sense, just to avoid a few generalizations there, if you observe, especially in Swami's life, you would see that many, many people had the opportunity to interact with Swami. So, in the sense to say that need of that moment is what draws the avatar to the devotee might not be comprehensive, to say the least. Maybe a need in the past had given them the, you know, deservedness to receive it in the present. But to make full use of that opportunity when it comes, I think that becomes all the more paramount. You know, many times, one time when it struck me really strongly was when a basketball match was, you know, hosted by the Indo Stadium and Swami was present there. I think the
Harlem Globetrotters.
Exhibition match, the Globetrotters were there. You know, imagine we as students would strive for an opportunity like that to perform in front of Swami. You know, it's a big thing for us to perform in front of Swami. We yearn for it and we pray to Swami to come and see our matches and our performances. And we used to have these competitions in the hostel. Almost every year we used to go and ask Swami to come and, you know, be a witness for the drama competition or the orchestra competition. And I was sitting there, these are a bunch of 12 or 15 American guys. They absolutely have no idea what fortune has come by their way. But they've got it, and they must have got it because of some reason in the past. But you know, when I was seeing that scene, I was thinking, Swami, you know, you might give us the blessings at some time in the future, But please give us also this added blessing that when that blessing comes our way, let us recognize it. Let it not come by and go by. You know, that becomes very, very important.
You know, that's a very valid point, Prem, which I think I definitely missed in the generalization I made while saying that when you need, you get. Yes, the need not be exactly in the present, but as you said, when Swami bestows that grace and blessing of His proximity, His nearness, if we can have the need simultaneously, we can ensure that we are able to convert that nearness right. into dearness.
Absolutely. And that's the important thing. And just before we go past this particular point, I was making maybe a general, I was just reminded of a very beautiful instance somebody shared with me. I don't know the complete details. How very, very apparently coincidentally sometimes, you know, interaction with Swami or with that divine person happens. I remember it seems sometime in the 2006 or 7, some installation had to be made in Swami's kitchen in the Yajur Mandir.
Okay.
That was, I think that was the time when Swami was making that shift and all that. So some particular gadget, utensil had to be installed in Swami's kitchen.
Appliance kind of thing.
So they had a tender floated and I think two or three people came by. And finally it was taken to Swami saying that Swami, these two people are ready to do it. Okay. And Swami randomly picked up one particular agency. He said, I want these people to do it. So they said, fine. And they informed that person. And that person came with his whole family. Because he said, anyway, we're going to Puttaparthi. Why not we all go and have darshan? So they all came. And it was told to Swami that the company people have come. They're going to do the installation. And Swami sent word saying that, call the whole family and said, Purnachandra, I want to meet all of them.
Okay. Wow. Okay?
And so the entire family, imagine they've just come to fit an appliance in Swami's kitchen or something like that. And they get called for this family interview. And in the interview, Swami tells about that person's father. He apparently was very, very devoted to Swami. And he was in fact part of Swami's Satsai organization. And many times when people would say that, you know, sir, you're doing so much, you know, Swami will definitely bless you. So he would say that, you know, all the blessing that I seek for the work I'm doing is sometime in the future, if my family and my children get the blessing of Swami's Sambhashan and, you know, an interview with Swami, I'll be more than pleased. And Swami referred to that and Swami said, that's why I called all of you.
That's wonderful.
I mean, imagine how many things have to be fall in place for such a thing to happen. And that family had no clue that their father had made a prayer like this and it was being answered in this way.
And it happened via a tender for a kitchen appliance.
Right. And you know, when you just casually look at Swami's life and say, why Swami does these things? Why should Swami have a car? Why should Swami have these luxuries in the room? You know, these are the points we miss out. These are the points we miss out because I think a couple of days back I was listening to a talk by Brother Sundara here, you know, who was in Swami's residence. He says this, you know, the respect with which Swami used to treat the gifts that used to come to Swami, whether he needs it or not, was such an eye-opener. Whatever would come to Swami's room, he said, see, Prashanthi Nilayam Ashram is so large, he could have, you know, n number of warehouses, but he will always insist that he wants to keep them in his own room. There would be hardly any place for him to move around, but he'll say, no, they've sent it for me, keep it. And his eyes would light up when he sees something. He would never use it,
You know, this brings another point in my mind. Recently, many were suggesting that why not the, you know, Yajur Mandir be made accessible to public so people can have a look at where Swami stayed. It is going to definitely enhance one's feeling of devotion, reverence, and, you know, it feels magical to be in the place where the Lord stayed.
Right.
Even as this came up, we had our own little discussion. Of course, not that it is going to influence the decision of the people on the top in any manner, but our own opinions which came up, there were some very, very valid points, Prem. One of that was, if at all the Yajur Mandir has to be opened up for public to have darshan, much before that, the interview room and Swami's first residence, that is at the Bhajan Hall or in Purnachandra, they should be opened up before the Yajur Mandir possibly, because I don't know, I have not seen the residence that Bhagwan stayed at in Purnachandra. But I have definitely had a look once at Swami's room above the Bhajan Hall. And it is so tiny, Prem. It is hardly about, have you seen it?
No, I don't see it.
Right? It's hardly about 12 feet by 8 feet, a cot in the center. That's it, a bed in the center and there is just about 2 feet of space around. And so when Swami in discourses said that after dinner I take a walk around my bed, that is literally true. Like a you know, like, it's almost like a bear in a cage, or a, you know, it's almost like that. It keeps pacing up and down. That is the thing I felt, and I felt when I saw that room, I had tears in my heart. You know, I was thinking, Swami, you who put gold above us devotees, you are staying in such a small concrete room. It has a small window connected into an outer room where a person who would attend on Swami, who would help Swami, who would be blessed with that blessing, would stay possibly. That's it. And that was a place where Swami stayed in till 1993. And after that, though I have not visited the residence at Purnachandra, from what I hear from Professor G. Venkatraman and a few others who have been privileged to go there, they say it's a small, dank, dark place. Means it always needs lighting because there's no natural ventilation coming in. And it is also small, no much bigger than the place where Swami lived in at the bhajan hall. So you see, this place is also where Swami stayed from, say, from 1993 till almost 2006. That's another 13 years. It's only 5 years or 6 years of his physical sojourn that Swami spent at Yajur Mandir. I mean, if people see Yajur Mandir and conclude that this is where the avatar stayed, it would be a very wrong opinion, because that is where the avatar stayed for less than 10% of the life.
Right.
Swami's life has been one of sacrifice, and it is indeed, we are very, very grateful to Swami that listening to our prayers in our hearts, he agreed to move to Yajur Mandir. Otherwise, what kind of horrible, hopeless sinners are we, Prem? I'm saying like this because this is the kind of feeling that will come through in the Ramayana ahead also, as Sumantara, everyone, you know, they curse themselves saying, what is the use of having all this if we are not able to get Rama into our lives, if we are not able to, you know, make this as an offering to Rama. Not, you're having an empire but not able to offer it to the Lord. You're having everything but not able to offer it to the Lord. Everything becomes meaningless. That is the kind of feeling we all would have got if Swami had not blessed us by spending a few years in Yajur Mandir. So I feel more than anything else, in order to make each one of us understand what Swami is, we possibly should have a look at where Swami stayed for more than 80 years of his life, rather than just look at Yajur Mandir.
I mean, very true. Some of these descriptions which, you know, the students who were fortunate to be with Swami describe, of course, at that time they never used to talk of it much, for reasons well known to all of us. You know, Swami would not like that. But, I mean, that again, when people don't talk about it much, people think that there's something to hide. But there is nothing but pain which we will get when we listen to that. And that's why it was hidden from us. And that's really the truth. Because many of these students will now come up and speak. I mean, when Swami said that true happiness lies within, he really embodied that. Because he showed that his happiness really came only from within. Because as we've said many times, all that he got from outside was prayers, pleas, you know,
pains
and problems and asking for solutions and asking for protection. What he got from outside was only that. His happiness truly came from within, and we really saw that, because definitely all said and done, Swami was the happiest person we actually would have come across in our life, because Swami was so bubbling with joy, energy and enthusiasm. And really, and that is exactly when Swami describes Lord Rama here in this situation, you know, he ensures that that personality of Lord Rama comes out in this whole thing.
I think, Prem, all of us, that is including our listeners, should hold on to this thought where you said that nothing comes from outside. The true source of joy, fountain of joy, is within, and from, if we depend on the external, it's only going to give pain, because that is going to come to us in Swami's own voice a little later in this satsang. So we'll hold on to that thought and now move towards Ayodhya along with Guha, who is on his way back, because Lord Rama has told Guha, he has bid him goodbye, and they have gone to Chitrakuta. As Guha is returning back to his fishing kingdom, if we can call so, his kingdom of boatmen, to his community, on the way he sees Sumantra the minister is actually waiting, because possibly he hopes to get some news, some further updates about the well-being of Rama and what is happening with Rama from Guha. And even as he is waiting there, he looks forlorn, dejected. He doesn't look like a minister at all. He's sitting under a tree, and it appears to Guha as if even his horses are wailing and weeping. And as Guha meets Sumantra, they both embrace each other. You know, there are only two situations when you hug each other. One is when both of you are celebrating, the other is when both of you are very sad. And this is the latter case here, when both are having pangs of deep pain in their heart, and it is that pain that unites both of them, and both of them embrace each other and start crying. And, you know, that is when Sumantra lets out. Possibly he was all alone till now, so once he gets some ears into which he can vent out, he starts venting out on his ill fortune, misfortune, and he says, you know, the very fact that I am alive itself is such a big curse on me. How hard-hearted I must have been that I have heard, I have seen, I have experienced Rama leaving, and yet I am alive and not dead. So that is how Sumantra starts wailing and weeping. You know, Prem, in this discussion of the meeting between Guha and Sumantra comes, I was reminded of the day Sai Gita left her mortal coil, the Swami's pet elephant. That day I could see two people apparently seem to be the most affected. And one is the perfect actor, that is our dear Lord, and the other is Pedareddy Garu, the caretaker of Sai Gita. So both of them, and this was precisely the scene I saw, you know, when Swami came there, he was on the wheelchair, and Pedareddy comes to Swami and his eyes are doing all the speaking, and he's just saying, Swami, Swami, Gita, Gita. And he's weeping. And you know, Swami also seemed to break down. Swami is also saying Gita. And both of them are holding each other's hand and consoling each other. So that might have been the kind of situation that happened here also. As Sumantra and Guha embraced each other, held each other, and tried to support each other. They were like, both of them were tottering, and each of them was trying to be the strength to the other.
And the beauty is, I mean, it doesn't come out in this particular scene, but the both of them, who are actually steeped in the sorrow, have witnessed the equanimity of Rama. That's the beauty. And in a sense, if you see what we talk of as the crowning glory of the Rama Avatar, of course, after the vanquishing of Ravana, is that what we refer to as Rama Rajya. And many times when Swami speaks about the Ramaraja kind of a condition, you know, where the society is in that, you could say, Ramaraja mode, is when, it's not when everybody is successful and everybody is making a lot of money, you know, it's not when your GDP is growing at 12% or 9%. It's not that way. Swami says it is a ideal situation where the sweeper is happy with the work he's doing and he's happy with the remuneration he's getting. The king is happy with what he is having and he doesn't desire for more, and everybody in each strata of the society is happy about where they are. And as a ruler, when Rama had to create such a Ramarajyam or a society of that sort, he had to actually percolate this idea into the society. That it is not in aspirations that you get happiness, but it is in satisfaction that you get happiness. And when he was to rule the country and, you know, probably give a message such as this, people knew that he was not simply talking out of thin air.
He has personally experienced.
Because people would have thought that, yeah, I mean, you've always been a prince and you've always lived in the royal palace. You know, you could be happy, not us.
And easy to speak from the pedestal.
Right. But now the citizens of Ayodhya have seen the transformation in the plight of Lord Rama and Lakshmana and Sita. And they've still seen that there was no change in the countenance of Lord Rama. You know, now they know that, yes, what our king is asking us to do is what he himself did. You know, he was the same when he was in the palace, he was the same when he was leaving to the forest, he was the same when he came back after 14 years.
That is why, you know, they say that the Ramayana holds relevance even to the modern times. You were just speaking of how everybody being contented and happy with what they're doing is most important. So today, you know, when they say that socialism is a failed system, it doesn't work, but it's counter-capitalism, we know what has happened. Some countries have collapsed, Greece is in debt, Iceland collapsed, America is not doing very good either, and there was that housing bubble crash. So it's not as if capitalism is a panacea for the ills, and capitalism is having its own huge gaping holes.
Right.
In that context, the Ramayana seems to present to us a kind of a divine socialism where it is not financial equality, but equality in contentment and peace that is important. So if the king, the pauper, the banker, the tailor, the driver, the software personnel, everybody is equally contented, then it becomes a beautiful economy, a wonderful economy. It does not matter whether one is rich or poor, because as Swami says, he who has maximum desires is the poorest man in the world. He who has maximum contentment is the richest man in the world. So in that sense, and in many other senses, the Ramayana holds relevance to the modern age.
Very true. And when you look at the scene of Sumantra and Guha, you know, going through the pangs of pain, it really doesn't matter whether your object of love is actually suffering or not, isn't it? Mm-hmm. when we saw Swami, you know, say coming on a wheelchair or looking sick sometimes or struggling to walk, it was very clear in our mind that Swami was not suffering. I don't think any of us had that doubt at all. But it did not stop us from feeling bad. It did not stop us from, you know, feeling pain. And I'm sure all of us used to sit and talk about it, and we used to get angry with Swami also sometimes, because we knew that he was completely in control and he was still letting it happen. So in a sense, it's very amazing. Actually, we're thinking that we are grieving for the other person. But even the thought that the other person you're grieving for is not actually unhappy, it doesn't stop you from grieving, isn't it?
Because the other person apparently does not seem to be fulfilling the expectations that we have.
Right.
You know, we are not upset with, we are upset with Swami because we feel that, come on, you are the director of the play. Why are you directing it in such a bad manner? Why don't you, you know, bring on the way that we are perceiving? So that is the reason. And that is why, you know, though Sumantra is wise, that is what actually Guha tells Sumantra. He says, Minister, you are profoundly intelligent. You are steadfast in your morality and you are a person who has actually identified the reality behind this entire passing show. So, there is nothing that I can tell you. See, that is the problem with trying to advise a person who is wise. Even a person who is theoretically wise, I have often seen this, Prem, when in those moments when I feel low, I feel down, I feel depressed or sad at some times, or angry, frustrated at times, it happens. That time, you know, when my well-wishers try to cheer me, the problem is all the arguments or all the things they will tell to console me, theoretically I am aware of it already. So it doesn't help me much. And many times it has happened that they end up saying, Arvind, you know all this, so I'm just reiterating it to you so that you, why don't you believe in what you know? And at that time I question myself, yes, these are the things that I state so strongly and I've used it to give myself joy so many times. Why don't I believe in what I believe actually? That is what happens. And that is what is happening here also. You know, it is not as if Sumantra is in need of any counsel or any wisdom. He knows everything. And that is the thing that Guha says. He says, Sumantra, O minister, you know everything. And so therefore, you should not be like this. You should be brave. Think about your duty. You have a duty to perform towards your emperor, towards the queens. They will be eagerly waiting, just like you were waiting for me to come with whatever news I have of Rama. They will be eager. They have no updates. They are 10 versions behind you. You are in version 10.1, they are in 1.1 still. They have no idea what has happened to Rama ever since he left. So you must make haste, go to the kingdom of Ayodhya, and then convey this and narrate to them all that has happened. That will give them some solace and strength. In this moment, when they are all so vulnerable, you should not add to their vulnerability and pain by being like this yourself. Be brave and go on. And that is how Sumantra agrees to go, though he is criticizing himself and feeling bad throughout the way.
I knew of a very saintly person, Swamiji. He used to always tell his disciples and devotees, you know, he said, if you have any problem in life, you're feeling any trouble in life, just take a day off and go to the government hospital and just take a walk along the corridors and you will feel better. Because you would say, you know, we've seen it even in Swami's hospitals, you know, it is a combination of poverty and pain and health problems. Of course, here it's completely different. The situation is completely different. But if you go to a government hospital or a hospital which charges you money, then you would see that, and you would say that when you see somebody else in pain, you'll automatically see how better your plight is. If you see that sequence of events which has happened here, you know, that first conversation between Lakshmana and Guha, where Lakshmana himself is in deep depression and pain. But when seeing Guha in pain, he gives him, you know, telling that, you know, fate is everything and we have to go through whatever we have to go through, and in fact, everything is a passing cloud. So Lakshmana, who was in depression, in trying to console Guha, gives him words of wisdom. And now the same Guha, he's also crying, but he's trying to console Sumantra and trying to give him words of consolation. And this same Sumantra is going to go and give the same words of wisdom and consolation to Dashrata.
I also think, Prem, it is a kind of relative sadness. See, though Lakshmana is low and down, in his heart he knows, he is feeling that I'm at least in a better position than Guha. Right. You know, Guha has to go back now. At least I get to be with Rama throughout. So he's able to give. And I think Guha is in a better position because Guha, I don't think in any way will feel responsible for what has happened to Rama. In that sense, Sumantra will feel more responsible because after all, he's a minister of the kingdom from which Rama is being banished.
Right.
And if you look at Dasharatha, oh my God, he must be feeling like the real culprit there. And so, therefore, relativity also plays its effect, and that is possibly another nice hint for us as to how we can use this relativity to our benefit. We often compare ourselves in our life, our financial condition, our emotional stability, our relationship, everything, with people whom we perceive as doing better than us. That is like using relativity to our disadvantage. Why not learn from the Ramayana to use relativity to our advantage by looking at people who are apparently not as well endowed as us, and therefore learn to spend our time in gratitude rather than in complaining.
Right. You know, and that exactly is the scene which is described before this Sumantra and Guha scene is described by Swami, where he talks about how, of course, we made a mention last week of how Lakshmana and Sita are actually rejoicing in the presence of Rama in spite of all the difficulties, and cannot but help to go back to those students who had the opportunity to spend time with Swami. Because if you go by the worldly standards, teenagers, the kind of life which actually gives them thrill and joy, what it involves and what these boys went through. But is there any comparison between how happy these boys were compared to, you know, teenagers or youngsters outside? Because these boys would hardly come out, you know, some of our classmates who used to get the chance in Swami's room, you would hardly see them. They would come for a class, then rush back to Swami's room, doing Swami's duty. You'll be busy all the time. You can't meet your friends. You can't meet your parents.
And these boys apparently are not interested in academic glory or achieving a career, nothing like that.
Right. And some of them used to be very good speakers. They would never get an opportunity to speak in front of Swami like the others. You know, some singers would never come out. And you would think that they're losing all that which would give them happiness. But they were so happy because they had the opportunity to serve Swami. And that's exactly what happened with Lakshmana and Sita, as Swami describes. Because though they were actually, you know, come from a royal palace to the forest, there was no sign in that there was a change in the happiness. In fact, if there was any change, it was only for the better.
And so coming back to the story, now Sumantra is therefore going towards Ayodhya, and he's thinking that he doesn't have the strength and courage to meet anybody on the way, because he's sure that everybody in the kingdom will be able to make out from his gait and demeanor.
Right.
And as Swami writes, apparently even the horses are depressed. The horses are shedding tears, and every time Guha or Sumantra mention the name Rama or Lakshmana, they turn around tugging at the reins, hoping to see the sight of those beloved forms. So Sumantra is sure that everybody in the kingdom is going to see this, and therefore he decides that possibly it would be good to go at night when everybody is sleeping and nobody will notice. So the embarrassment and the pain and all this will become less. But then, you know, Sumantra realizes himself before he actually sees it that when Rama has left Ayodhya, people seem to have lost all their interest in food and sleep also. You know, as I read Swami's description, I was reminded of exactly those 3 days when, you know, when it was announced that Swami has left the physical and Swami's body was kept in state. I think for those 3 days, many of us would have hardly slept a few hours. I don't think anyone would have bothered about food or drink or anything, and that's why so many devotees set up stalls and they were forcing people to eat as they waited in the lines, because the body has to be sustained. That is what, you know, having seen those 3 days in Prashanthi Nilayam, I find it absolutely easy and simple to empathize with what was happening in Ayodhya. And therefore, even though Sumantra reaches in the middle of the night, the whole of Ayodhya is awake. And though Sumantra has brought his chariot to a dead slow walk so that it doesn't make any sound, because the streets are deserted, Swami writes that the neighing of the horses, his horses of the chariot, is so filled with pain, and the way they moan and neigh, the whole of Ayodhya comes to know, and they come and see Sumantra, and they see that he's sitting alone in the chariot. They realize that what has happened is something that they never wanted to imagine, but it has happened. And say, so they let out wails, and they're howling, and they're shouting, and they're asking. Ayodhya has never witnessed such scenes, and in the middle of the night it would always be peaceful and very secure, safe and happy. But in the middle of the night there's commotion and chaos because everybody is coming, running, wailing, howling, fainting. It's a scene of immeasurable grief, and amidst all this, like a statue, Sumantra is just sitting because he has no idea what he should do, what he should speak, what he can say. But his face and his tears and his looks say it all, and everybody knows the inevitable has happened. That is when actually a few maids from Kausalya's chambers come running and tell Sumantra that he is being summoned to the palace of the king.
And Sumantra has no option but to face the king now, because I think that would be the most difficult part for him, because he knows what happens, what would happen when this news that he could not console Rama and he could not get him back reaches. You know, that's what hope can do, I think, in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm sure Dashrath knew that there is no way Rama is going to go back on his words.
Mm-hmm.
But still, that hope, I think, would have kept him alive.
Yes.
Because otherwise, till now, by now, he should have, you know, succumbed to that sorrow which he was suffering with. But what happens when Sumantra goes and meets Dashrath? Maybe we'll come to that after a short break. We've gone on for about 45 minutes, so dear listeners, don't go away. We'll just play out a small bhajan, and on the other side of the bhajan, we'll continue the story as it goes.
जय कौशल्या निंदनदा परमानंद आनंद राम जय कौशल्या
Yeah.
Welcome back, dear listeners. Sumantra has now reached the Royal Darbar Hall, and as he enters, though it is the middle of the night, almost nobody has slept, he sees a scene that he would not have imagined in his wildest dreams. Even though he is returned after seeing Rama off, he would not have imagined such a pathetic scene. That is how it is, because the king is on the floor, his head is on the lap of the Queen Kausalya, and Sumitra too is in the background there, and the entire scene looks so chaotic and it's filled with pain. And even as he enters, Dasharatha, you know, he starts lamenting, because he knows that Rama has not come back, and the purpose with which he has sent Sumantra has not been realized. And just as you said, till now he was living on hope, and now hope gets extinguished. Once a person loses hope, it is a very rapid decline, and that is exactly what happens to Dasharatha. Dasharatha starts bemoaning his fate. You know, he wonders the same thing, the same kind of things that Sumantra said. How is it that I am still alive? How can I continue my life without my tender children? And, you know, it is one self-criticizing statement after another, and it is very clear that Dasharatha is in some real deep depression, and it doesn't actually befit a king to be like that, an emperor to be like that, because he is raving about over there, craving for his Rama. And that is when Sumantra now starts consoling. Just as we discussed, each one consoles the other. Sumantra right. starts consoling Dasharatha. He tells the emperor that, "Oh emperor, you are extremely wise. You are made in a heroic mold. You are not an ordinary person. You know your abilities, you know your capabilities, they are profound. And on top of all that, you descend from a lineage that is divine. The Raghukula, the solar dynasty is so magnificent, and you are a scion of that dynasty. You have always been true in your service of the sages and saints. You have done everything perfectly. And you are also very wise. I am sure you know that just like day follows night and night follows day, pain follows pleasure and pleasure follows pain. A pleasure is an interval between two pains, as Swami says. You know, so he tells this, and therefore he advises his king to hold on. He says, "Oh king, hold on, be equanimous, because this is what is expected of us, right? Because after pain comes pleasure, after pleasure comes pain. So now this is a dark moment, and this is a moment when we should hold on, realizing that this too shall pass. Things will change for the better, because it has gone to the worst possible situation now." So in this manner, Sumantra tries to console Dasharatha and tries to give him strength, and in fact helps him to sit up a little bit, propping him with pillows, because till now he's prostrate on the ground.
And after that, he describes the events which happen after he leaves them, you know, after they cross the river, and how, with the help of Guha, how they cross over the river. And at the point where he's supposed to leave, he says how Rama asked for those the milk from the banyan tree and applies it on his hair, knots it into a mat, and you know, like how the people who live, mendicants who live in the forest do. And you know, each one of these adds to the sorrow of Dasharatha when he hears that Rama is doing all these things. And then final moment, he says how Rama calls Sumantra and says, "Please take this message to the people of Ayodhya. Tell that this is what Rama said, that whoever takes care of the welfare of my father, whoever obeys my father and respects my father, they are dear to me." And that is the message, saying that, you know, I have no anger against them, no animosity whatsoever. And in fact, whoever is taking good care of my father is definitely dear to me. That's the message he sends word. And then Mother Sita comes and gives her message. He says, "Please tell my father-in-law and mother-in-law that they don't have to worry even one bit about me. I'm absolutely delighted to be doing what I'm doing. I'm not in sorrow, I'm not in pain, I'm not in distress. Please convey this message." So he gives each one of these messages to Dasharatha, and you know, it's even more painful, you know, because you can, if you think of it, even if you're a bad son, I wouldn't feel so bad, you know. That's what might have been running in Dasharatha's mind. Even if you were you know, upset lot, that would have given some consolation.
Actually, when you were speaking, I was thinking, if though this speaks a lot about the nobility of Rama, Lakshmana and Sita. Dasharatha might have preferred to hear Sumantra say that, Lord, Rama is saying that the forest is a terrible place and how could you send him, how could you be so cruel? He requests you to call him back.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that would have sounded like mana from the heavens for Dasharatha. But this is a point where the goodness and nobility of his, of the children, of the princess and Mother Sita is actually causing him more pain, as you rightly put it.
Right. And after that, he describes the departing scene where his prayer to Rama to allow him to stay is rejected, and he's told that, you know, after giving the messages, he said, no, you will have to go back and convey this. You will have to go and take care of my father, who must be in a lot of pain because of the separation. And that's when Sumantra says that, you know, he was torn by pain himself. He wanted to literally jump into the river and drown himself. But just because he had to carry out this instruction given to him by Lord Rama, he has come back to convey this message.
And when he tells this to Dasharatha, you know, this is like really adding salt to the wounds. When you feel, you know, I remember one incident from my childhood, Prem. I remember this because my mother had told this to me,
mm-hmm.
to state how powerful nobility is. Apparently, I don't remember the incident, but I remember my mother narrating it to me. Apparently, when I was having food one day, it was some kind of festival and food was being served in the plantain leaf. And as I was eating my food, one of my cousin brothers, quite elder to me, he decided to play a prank. And as I bent down to put a morsel of food into my mouth, he pressed my face into the food, into the leaf. So all the rasam, sambar, everything, some got into my eyes and I started crying and all the food came on and he had a laugh. And the corner of the eye, he saw my mother looking at him. And he got scared because what is going to happen to him? And when that happened, my mother walked up till there, didn't tell him anything. He was elder to me, but he would have been in his teenage years. I was just a 4 or 5 year old.
Mm-hmm.
My mother took me, walked, washed my face, everything, made me sit in another place, gave me my food, and that was it. And she didn't tell anything. And she says, 4 days later he came, he fell at her feet, he cried and he said, please scold me. He told my mother, please scold me. You know, blown. And even to this day, recently I had met him. I was meeting him after so many years. When I met him, he remembered and he told my mother that, you know, I'm so sorry that this happened. And I was just thinking, oh my God, you know, if my mother had brought a stick and hit him on his head also, it might not have made this kind of impact. So there is a kind of power when you respond to negativity with positivity, with nobility. And that makes you feel even more horrible. And in this situation now, Dasharatha is feeling that I have done something really terrible. I have done something terrible. And therefore, he is wanting something terrible to happen to him so that his conscience feels satiated that I did bad and I got back bad. But instead of that, the person on whom he feels he has perpetrated a grave injustice is responding to him with a lot of love and nobility, and he's unable to bear it. And though Sumantra has propped him, hearing all these, the beautiful words of Rama, Lakshmana and Sita, Dasharatha's heart tears asunder. He collapses back onto Kausalya's lap. And when Kausalya is trying to console him, saying that, O king, you must be strong, he says, no, this is my fate. This is my fate. And that is when he narrates the story of something that had happened when he was childless and when he had gone on a hunt.
Right. And in fact, by now the citizens of Ayodhya know that, you know, the king is actually drowning into a very, very deep state of depression, and he might not even recover from that.
Hmm.
And that's why I think in between even Kausalya tries to tell him that, you know, you just have some courage, we'll call back Rama, Rama will come.
Hmm.
You know, if you give him the hope that you will recover, if he comes, then he will come.
As you said, hope was the only thing on which he was hanging.
He was hanging, and she was trying to tell him that, and Dasharatha knew. And that is when he recollected that this was meant to be, the situation was meant to be. And that is when he draws courage and starts narrating this episode, where he says that once when he goes on a hunt with all his army and his ministers, and they go into the forest and they've labored for one full day and they've not found any game. And that's when he decides that I won't return back to my kingdom if I don't find one, till I find one. And they wait late into the night, into the evening, looking for some animal to come. And that's when they hear the rustling of leaves near a particular pond.
A water hole, huh?
A water hole. And he says that I didn't see any animal, but I knew that there was some animal which was quenching its thirst.
He couldn't see because it was dark by now.
Right. And that is when Dasharatha says that I had the ability to fire even with the sound. I don't have to see my target. Just by listening to my target, I had the ability to fire. So I desire to use that.
There's a term for that. They call it Shabdavedi.
Okay.
They say that a person is a Shabdavedi means he is able to shoot a target by just hearing it. He need not see it. And all our heroes, Rama, Dasharatha, Arjuna in the Mahabharata, Krishna, they're all supposed to be Shabdavedis, where they are able to shoot at a target by just hearing it. And Dasharatha does that, and instead of hearing the cry of an animal, he hears the wail of a boy. And he's shocked to find that he has shot down a teenager possibly, who is drinking water. And he's shocked when he rushes to him, though the boy is in great pain and he is in the throes of death. He tells, O King, I understand. You know, it's amazing to, this boy's name is Shravana, Shravana Kumar, and it's amazing how he's able to be equanimous even in that situation. I think that is one lesson Ramayana teaches us at every point. The power of equanimity and how being equanimous is the way in life. Because even in the throes of death, Shravan Kumar tells Dasharatha that, O my king, I know that you mistook me for an animal, but right now my thoughts are with my parents. Both my parents are blind and aged, and I carry them about everywhere. I am their only support, and they were thirsty, so I came here to fetch water for them. And this unfortunate incident has happened. I would be grateful if you are able to take this water and give it to them and slake their thirst. I'm sure you know about how his parents were disabled, right?
No, I don't know that.
It is said that both his parents were blind.
Okay.
And they were weak also. Mm-hmm. And therefore, if you look at any, even if you Google the story, the picture that comes of Shravan Kumar is he's carrying a stick on his shoulders.
Okay.
And on either stick side of the stick are suspended two baskets, one basket each. In each basket, his parents sit. So he carries them about because he is their, you know, eyes and feet, literally. So he carries them about and they can't imagine a life without him. They are so dependent on him. And because they are thirsty and he has no idea where water is, in order to be faster, he puts them down at one place. They are sitting on that in the baskets. And Shravan Kumar has gone in search of water. And now he has slaked his thirst, and as he is taking water to his blind aged parents, he has been shot by the arrow and he is dead. And he is dying. And Dasharatha doesn't know what else to do because his boy in front of him has died. So he takes the water and goes. And because the parents are blind, they're not able to make out. So once Dasharatha hands them the water, they say, Oh son, why took you so long? Come near and you feed us. Because there cannot be greater panacea than you feeding us. And Dasharatha does not know what to do. They want to fondle, but Dasharatha knows that when they fondle his head, they will not touch Shravan Kumar's head, but they will touch his crown. They will know that something is amiss. And that is why he requests the guards to quickly get the body of their son, Shravan Kumar. And that is placed. And that when that is placed before them, the mother and father realize that their son is dead. And that is when the fateful moment comes.
You know, this story of Shravan Kumar, very interestingly, I mean, we've grown up reading it, and we've read it in comics, we've heard it in our school and from our parents and all that. But the way Swami puts it, the way Swami describes this event and that character of Shravan Kumar, I think it's completely different. You know, he gives a description of himself, how he is the only refuge for his parents and how he takes care of them and how they are blind and all those things as you narrated. And he says that I have found complete bliss and happiness in serving them, and not only happiness, I have also realized the truth through this service. You know, he says, because I am a realized person, and that is why he, with such equanimity, he describes, he says, this has happened because it was meant to happen, and I have no complaints. He says, this had to be, you had to mistake me for an animal, you had to kill me. If this was not a plot of fate, it wouldn't have happened, so I have no anger against you. And that is why he doesn't curse. You know, it's later, of course, we're going to come to the point where his parents curse, but he doesn't curse because he says, through this service to my parents, I have actually realized the truth.
Matra Devo Bhava, Pitra Devo Bhava.
And you know how beautifully Swami actually injects that powerful message in this small scene. And then he describes that take this water and don't tell them of what has happened here till they quench their thirst. Because he knows that if they come to know, they will not even drink this water.
Mm.
And that's the instruction he gives Dashrata. And then Dashrata goes and he has to explain, because they say that if you don't tell us what has happened, we will not drink this water.
I have personally heard Swami narrating this story. It was in Hadshi, in a dining table conference.
Okay.
I'm calling it a dining table conference, but in a dining session, Swami was speaking to the parents of the Jadav brothers, who were Swami's instruments in building this mandir at Panduranga Kshetra in Hadshi, as well as the one in Latur and Chakur.
Right.
So that is the time when Swami narrated this, and he gave the greatest bliss the parents could get by saying that both your sons are like that Shravan Kumar. So that is when I heard this Shravan Kumar story, and believe me, Prem, even in 2009 when this happened, Swami told the entire story in all its details in Hindi, that too, because the parents there did not understand Telugu, and he was speaking in Hindi and he told it exactly the way he has written it in the Ramkatha Rasavahini. And you know, that is the time when, but what while narrating over there, Swami stopped the story at one point, because there his objective was to highlight the devotion of Shravan Kumar. In Ramkatha Rasavahini, the story continues as Dashrata places Shravan Kumar's body and the parents get to know that their son is dead and this person is a perpetrator. They don't even know who it is. So they say that, you know, we have only one request. We can't live anymore because our son was our everything. They literally can't. They can't move about. They can't do anything. So they say that along with the son, we are going to immolate ourselves. And they indeed immolate themselves by, as Swami says, via a yogic fire. A fire that is created out of their sheer will because of their yogic practices. And before that, they just say that, you know, this is the law of nature. This is the law of karma. There's no escaping it. And therefore, the way we are dying because of pangs of suffering from, because pangs of suffering caused by the separation from our son, because our son has been cruelly taken away, been taken away from us. In the same manner, whoever you are, you will also die with the same pangs. It is actually at that point in time that Dashrata introduces himself as Dashrata. So this curse is here also another message that comes forth is, you know, karma doesn't distinguish whether you are a prince or a pauper or a rich or a poor man. Whoever you are going to reap the consequences of your karma. And therefore, even whoever it might have been would have had to suffer this curse, this karma. And Dashrata is now narrating this to Kausalya. He is in his death throes now because this story comes to his mind because he realizes that his breath is leaving him. He is not able to live anymore because of the pangs of suffering from separation from his son, and the story has come to mind. But the beautiful thing is, he tells, oh Kausalya, at that point in time when they put this curse, I rejoiced.
Right.
Isn't it strange, Prem?
Right, because he says that till then, you know, we spoke of how the Ramayana starts where he doesn't have a son for a very long time, and that's the cause of most of his worries. And that is when this curse comes his way. He says, for the first time I've been told by destiny that don't worry, you are going to have a son. Because unless I have a son, I'm not going to undergo this period of having a separation from him and dying out of that grief. So he says that curse, in a sense, came as a blessing for me. Because it gave me hope that I will have a son sometime in the future.
And Prem, one more beautiful point that I just can't help but make over here is that he felt at that point in time that it's wonderful that I've got this curse because it means that I'm going to get a son and I'll rejoice. But having got a son, not one, four sons, did his sorrow end? It did not, because today he's dying out of sorrow only. The cause for his death is nothing but sorrow. So, you know, it again reinforces very subtly the lesson that nothing in the world is going to give you permanent joy. At this point in time, you feel that this will give you joy. Once you get that, you are not going to get joy because everything else is going to give you only chinta. Chinta meaning worry.
Right.
And I would be actually stealing away Swami's beautiful statement if I state it here. So I will not state it. I think at this point in time, we should listen to Swami taking on the narrative from here. Swami beautifully narrates the happenings that occur after Dasharatha narrates the story to Kausalya. What happens is, in one moment, Dasharatha collapses and gives up his breath.
Because at this point he realizes that this is the moment. Now once he recollects that Shravan Kumara story, he knows that yes, this was meant to be. This was the end which is my destiny. So the moment that realization comes and he is told the story, I think that's when he collapses and he dies. And as you said, I think we should leave the narrative after this for Swami, because you know the lessons which Swami draws from it is indeed very, very profound.
ఈ దశరథుడు మరణించిన తర్వాత
డెత్ ఆఫ్ దశరథ
వశిష్ఠుల వారు
వశిష్ఠ
కేకేయ రాజ్యమునకు వర్తమానం పంపాడు.
హి సెండ్ ద మెసేజ్ టు ద కేకేయ.
ఏమని దశరథుడు మరణించాడని చెప్పలేదు.
నాట్ దట్ దశరథ డైడ్.
తక్షణం మీరు రావాల్సింది అన్నారు.
హి సెడ్ యు స్టార్ట్ ఇమీడియట్లీ.
భరతుడు శత్రుఘ్నుడు ఆనాడు ఏ ప్లేన్ లో ఏ కార్ లో ఏ హెలికాప్టర్ లో ఒకటి లేవు.
Those days there were no flights.
రథములో రానే రావాలి.
They must come in chariots.
రావడానికి 15 దినములు పట్టింది.
It will take 15 days to reach.
ఆనాడు ఈ శవాన్ని దాచిపెట్టడానికి ఏ ఐస్ గడ్డలో ఏ యొక్క ఇదో రసక పదార్థాలు లేవు. అప్పుడు
there were no chemicals or ice to protect the dead
body. అప్పుడు కూడా చచ్చిన దేహాలంతా ఊరుగాయ వేసినట్టుగా నూనెలో వేసేశారు.
Just as a pickle, even the dead body is kept in the oil there.
Bharata Shatrughna vachchenta varaku nunnilo tarippettaru.
So until the arrival of Bharata Shatrughna, the dead body of Dasharatha is kept in oil.
Bharata Shatrughna parigetti vastunnaru.
Bharata Shatrughna
chaala veganga vastunnaru.
Coming very fast.
Ayodhya lo praveshinchetappatiki ayodhyulanta pakshulu kudanu talalu unchukoni edustunnayi.
By the time they reach Ayodhya, everybody bend their
అయోధ్య కళాహీనంగా కనిపించింది.
అయోధ్య లాస్ట్ ఆల్ ఇట్స్ గ్లామర్.
పశువులు కూడా తల ఎత్తి ఉండటం లేదు.
కౌస్ ఆల్సో నెవర్ రైజ్ దేర్ హెడ్స్.
బజార్లో తిరిగేటువంటి కుక్కలు కూడా విలపిస్తూనే ఉంటున్నాయి.
డాగ్స్ ఆన్ ది స్ట్రీట్స్ వర్ క్రైయింగ్.
ఏమిటి ఈ విచారమునకు కారణము అని విచారించాడు భరతుడు.
భరత ఇన్వెస్టిగేటెడ్ ద రీజన్ బిహైండ్ ఇట్.
రథము దిగాడు, లోపల పరిగెత్తాడు.
హి గాట్ డౌన్ ఫ్రమ్ ద చారిట్ అండ్ ర్యాన్.
తల్లిని చూచాడు.
సోదమాద.
ఆమె ఒక వికార స్వరూపాన్ని ధరించింది.
షీ వాస్ ఇన్ ఎ డిఫరెంట్ ఫార్మ్ దాన్ యూజువల్.
ధరించినటువంటి కైక ధైర్యంతో, లక్ష్మణ భరత నీవు ఇంకా చేయవలసిన కార్యాలు నువ్వు ప్రయత్నించున్నాయి.
షి పిక్డ్ అప్ అండ్ కరేజ్ అండ్ సెడ్ భరత
తండ్రి మరణించాడు.
ఫాదర్ డైడ్.
కర్మకాండం నీవు ఆచరించమని చెప్పింది.
ఆల్ ద లాస్ట్ రైట్స్ మస్ట్ బి పర్ఫార్మ్డ్.
రామలక్ష్మణులు ఎక్కడ పోయారు?
వాట్ హ్యాపెన్ టు రామలక్ష్మణ?
ఆనందించాడు. అయ్యో తండ్రి మరణించే సమయం లోపల నేను శత్రుఘ్నుడు లేకపోయామే. తండ్రి ఏమి చెప్పాలనుకున్నాడో మాకు కేవలం ఈ ప్రాప్తి రామలక్ష్మణుడికే సంప్రాప్తమైంది.
He felt that at least he was happy that Ramalakshmana were there on the bedside in the last two moments of
Dasharatha. కనుక కట్టగడ తండ్రిని చూచేటువంటి ప్రాప్తి రామలక్ష్మణుడికే దక్కింది.
రామలక్ష్మణ కుడ్ బి దేర్ when Dasharatha was
dying. చాలా బాధపడుతూ వచ్చాడు.
He felt so sad that he was not there at the time, bedside.
తక్షణమే కౌసల్య మందిరానికి వెళ్లాడు.
Immediately went to Kausalya's palace.
ఆమె జరిగినటువంటి విషయం అంతా కూడా పూసగురించినట్టు చెప్పింది.
He told in verbatim what all that had happened.
అమ్మ అడవికి పోయినటువంటి రామలక్ష్మణులు ఇంతకాలం ఎందుకు రాలేదు?
Mother, how is it that Rama has gone to forest? Has not returned yet.
ఇంకా 14 సంవత్సరం వరకు రారు వారు అన్నారు.
They are not going to return for 14 years to come.
తండ్రి పోయినటువంటి దుఃఖంతో మునిగిపోతున్నటువంటి భరత శత్రుఘ్నులు రామ వియోగాన్ని భరించుకోలేక తండ్రి పైన క్రోధం వచ్చేసింది.
They are feeling so sad because the death of the father. On hearing that Ramalakshmana are there in the forest,
anaga okadani kante adhikamaina prema chuchinappudu rendavo prema tagipothundi. Okadani kante adhikamaina prema chuchinappudu rendavo prema tagipothundi.
When they have more of love towards the second thing, the first love will be diminishing.
Tandrinki ento prema ga undinatunte varu Bharata Shatrughna.
Bharata Shatrughna loved their father.
కానీ అతనికంటే మరింత ప్రేమ రామలక్ష్మణుల పైన.
బట్ దే లవ్ రామలక్ష్మణ మచ్ మోర్.
రామ రామ అంటే రామ ప్రాణమే వీళ్ళకి.
దే కన్సిడర్ రామ ఇస్ వెరీ లాయల్.
భరత శత్రుఘ్న లక్ష్మణులకు అందరికీ రాములే ఏకైక ప్రాణము.
ఫర్ లక్ష్మణ భరత శత్రుఘ్న రామ ఇస్ వెరీ లాయల్.
నేను తండ్రి కర్మకాండను కూడా నేను చేయను.
ఐ విల్ నాట్ పర్ఫార్మ్ ద లాస్ట్ రైట్.
నేను రాముల దగ్గరికి వెళ్తానన్నా.
ఐ విల్ గో టు రామ హీ సెడ్.
కానీ వశిష్ఠుల వారు సమాధాన పరచి
వశిష్ఠాయన
ఇప్పటికే ఆలస్యం అయిపోయింది.
ఇట్స్ ఆల్రెడీ డిలే.
ఏ కర్మలంతా నువ్వు ఆచరించవలసింది తప్పదు.
యు మస్ట్ నెసెసరీ డూ లాస్ట్
రైట్. నీవంతా కూడా కర్మకాండను ఆచరించే, మనం అందరూ కలిసి వెళ్దాం రాముల దగ్గరికి అన్నాడు.
ఆఫ్టర్ ఆల్ ది యాక్టివిటీ దట్ యువర్ సపోజ్ టు డూ, లెట్స్ ఆల్ గో టుగెదర్.
అనగా ఇక్కడ ఒక విషయాన్ని మనం గుర్తించాలి.
హియర్ వీ హావ్ టు నో వన్ పాయింట్.
ఎంతో ప్రేమగా ఉండినటువంటి ఒక తండ్రి పైన కూడాను
All the love that they have to respond.
అంతకంటే అధికమైన ప్రేమ కలిగినటువంటి రామ వియోగాన్ని భరించుకోలేక తండ్రి పైన కూడా ద్వేషం వచ్చేసింది.
As they could not bear the pangs of separation from Rama Lakshmana, they had bitter hatred towards mother Kaikeyi.
మనలో ఉండినటువంటి దీన్ని దుఃఖాన్ని ఒక దుఃఖాన్ని ఒకటి మార్చాలంటే ఏ దుఃఖంగా మారుస్తుంది.
So one grief is converted to another form of grief. What sort of it?
Muttuta oka chinta.
The birth is one grief.
Bhumi nunduta chinta.
Life on earth is one of
it. Samsaram oka chinta.
The family life.
Chavu chinta.
The death.
బాల్యమంతయు చింత.
చైల్డ్హుడ్.
వార్ధక్యం ఒక చింత.
ఓల్డ్ ఏజ్.
జీవించుట ఒక చింత.
లైఫ్.
చెడుపు చింత.
ఫెయిల్యూర్.
కర్మలన్నీ చింత.
ఆల్ యాక్షన్స్.
కష్టము ఒక చింత.
డిఫికల్టీ.
సంతసం ఒక చింత.
హ్యాపీనెస్.
వింత చింత.
మిస్టరీ.
సర్వ చింతల బాపెడి సర్వేశ ప్రేమ పొందుడికడైన ప్రజలార పొందు మీరా. అన్ని చింతలు బాపేటువంటి చింత ఒకే చింత, అదే సర్వేశ్వర చింత.
All these are worries, but when you think of God, that all other worries should be solved.
అధికమైనటువంటి చింత భగవంతుని చింత.
So you should think of God and higher
level. దీనికి మించిన చింత మరొకటి లేదు.
There is nothing higher than this.
ఆ చింతలో మనం మునిగితేమంటే ఈ చింతలు అన్ని కూడా నువ్వు గాలికి కొట్టుపోయినట్టు పట్టుకొట్టుకుని పోతాయి.
The moment you drown yourself in the thought of God, rest of things will go.
కనుకని ఈ ప్రాకృతమైనటువంటి అల్పమైనటువంటి చింతలకు మనం కుంగిపోనక్కర్లేదు.
సో యూ షుడ్ నాట్ బి డిప్రెస్ బికాస్ ఆఫ్ ది వరల్డ్లీ థాట్స్.
అన్ని చింతల కంటే పెద్ద చింత భగవంతుని యొక్క చింతనే.
హైయెస్ట్ థాట్ ఈస్ దట్
భగవంతుని యొక్క వియోగ చింతనే.
యూ షుడ్ ఫీల్ సారీ ఫర్
ది ప్రేమ చింతనే.
యూ షుడ్ ఫీల్ సారీ.
ఈ ప్రేమ చింతలో మనం మునిగినామంటే ఈ చింతలంతా మనం లెక్క చేయనక్కర్లేదు.
ది మూమెంట్ యు హావ్ గాట్ ద థాట్ ఆఫ్ లవ్, యు నీడ్ నాట్ బి బదర్డ్ ఆఫ్ ద రెస్ట్.
దేర్ వాస్ ఎ క్లిప్, ఇట్ వాస్ ఫ్రమ్ ద 1996 Samukos again, 22nd of May. You know, so many beautiful points which Swami brings in there, especially because all said and done, in life, sorrow is a period where we learn a lot of lessons.
Hmm.
And I think that's why this is one of the most depressing part of the whole story. Of course, many are there to follow, but this particular one where so many are grieving over one incident, Swami is driving us a lot of important lessons in this one particular part. Where of course we spoke about the destiny part in one hand. And the other one is here which Swami says that Swami would often make that statement, Anityam Asukham Loke. Right. In the world, you are bound to encounter sorrow after sorrow.
Hmm.
But how do you handle it? Swami says that if you, I mean, all sorrow comes because you're running after something or the other. The moment you start desiring or craving for something which is higher, these desires and cravings which are lower will fall apart by their on their own. And that's what Swami makes that statement there in that discourse too, isn't it?
He says that as soon as they got to know that, as soon as Bharata and Shatrughna, you know, just summarizing, dear listeners, here we will be speaking some things because though Swami has beautifully narrated this, there are some points, additional points that he makes in the Ramkatha Rasavahini, that's all. So Rama, Bharata and Shatrughna have been summoned, and as soon as they come, when they get to know from their mother that their father is dead, they are drowned in sorrow because they love their father a lot. And Swami then says, when they get to know from Kausalya that Dasharatha had banished them, banished Rama, Lakshmana and Sita to the forest, then their sorrow immediately turns to anger, and in fact Bharata refuses to perform the funeral rites of the father. He says, he is not a father to me if he has sent my brother Rama to the forest. And Swami there, he quickly, you know, he throws in that beautiful message. I mean, we have to be alert to catch it, where Swami says that when you love something much more, then the lesser love drops away. And that is again a secret to life. The secret to overcoming attachment, the secret to solving all our problems of our desires, which is to attach ourselves to something higher, love something much more. If we love Swami the most, love Swami from every fiber in our body, from the core of our heart, then nothing in life can actually affect us, because nothing will matter. It is only Swami who will matter. It is really an inspiration for each one of us to develop that kind of a love towards Swami. Because when we desire God, everything else drops away automatically. We need not put in extra effort to overcoming desires. We just need to cultivate a stronger desire. And that is a nice spiritual hint for us, that we need not spend our time in trying to overcome desires. Let us, because we are specialists at developing desires, right? We are all specialists at developing desires. The Master, the Lord, always ensures that we convert our biggest weakness into our biggest strength. Our biggest weakness is we specialize and develop desires. And God converts it into our greatest strength by saying, yes, develop desire, but develop that towards God. Automatically all your desires will fall away. That is one lesson that comes forth so beautifully.
Very true. Many times when I look at this particular episode in the Ramayana, one might wonder what is the difference between the attachment which Dasharatha had compared to the attachment which somebody like Dhritarashtra had in the Mahabharata. Because he was also always portrayed as a father who was
very attached.
Very, very attached to his sons, and that was what which brought his downfall. Because here is Dasharatha who's also attached. You know, that is why in Sanskrit there is a saying, I don't know the thing verbatim, where it says that one noble son actually gives liberation to the whole lineage.
I don't know if this is the exact one you're looking for, but there's one which says, Suputra Kula Deepakaha.
Right. You know, he kind
a
of...
A good son can, is a lamp, right,
for the entire lineage. You know, if you see that, how very good it is if you're able to have an attachment to a son who is noble. Because there, what we see in Mahabharata is, the son who is constantly misusing the attachment and affection of the father. Mm. And here is a son who is noble who says that I'm going to stick to my nobility even if it is going to hurt my father who is so attached to me. And that is why here, if you see in comparison, that is why Swami is saying that the only attachment which can actually benefit you is when you attach yourself to nobility, when you attach yourself to divinity. And that was the benefit which Dasharatha had as well as Bharata is also having here.
At the same time, see Prem, all said and done, yes, you might get attached to divinity. But attachment, as Swami says, is the cause for pain. And that is inevitable.
Right.
See, if you are truly attached to Rama, the divine, then there is no need to cry, because how can Rama go anywhere? See, if today you and me feel pain, that is possibly the negative of our attachment to Swami. Of course, our attachment to Swami has given us so many positives.
Right.
But attachment itself is a negative which we have to overcome. Otherwise, now Dasharatha is dying here because of his attachment only. So, though attachment to nobility is better than attachment to something wicked, attachment itself has to be overcome. And, well, that is a journey which all of us are making. And why it should be overcome, Swami again beautifully says in the discourse. Because he says, nothing in this world can give you permanent joy, because nothing in the world is permanent. In fact, Swami says your birth is a chinta, your growing is a chinta, your death is a chinta, your childhood is a chinta. The beautiful way Swami plays is, chinta is a Sanskrit word which means worry.
Right.
Chinta also means thoughts. Thoughts. And Swami says among all the chintas, the only chinta that will save you is Bhagavad Chinta, which is thoughts of God. And so, therefore Swami says, you know, the only permanent and eternal thing in this universe is God. And therefore, if you seek permanent and eternal happiness, you can get it only from God. And therefore, instead of making a chinta out of everything in your life, in fact, in another discourse, Swami says, all these chintas will one day become a chitta for you, meaning your funeral pyre. Mm-hmm. All these worries will become the fire which will burn you to ashes. Instead of that, have Bhagavad Chinta which will redeem you. And that is another beautiful message that Swami slips through and grants us, if we are able to latch on to it, it will redeem our lives. That the only way out of all these chintas and worries is Bhagavad Chinta, or thoughts about God.
And as you said, a couple of details which Swami gives in the Ramkatha, in the writings in Ramkatha, which was not mentioned in this clip, is, Vasishtha sends word through Bharata, through the Kekaya kingdom, and he says that it takes 15 days for them to come, coming the fastest journey. But the plight of Bharata there in Kekaya, which Swami describes, that even before he gets the news, he is very, very restless for so many days, because he has a premonition of something which has gone wrong in his kingdom. He doesn't know what it is, but he knows that there's something wrong, something amiss, which he's going to come to know about.
And Swami says that is because he's also been getting nightmares and bad dreams.
Right, he keeps getting nightmares and bad dreams. And that's when this messenger comes. And this messenger has been strictly told, don't give him any details. Just tell him it is the orders of the preceptor that he and Shatrughna come back as soon as possible. And the moment this news comes to Bharata, he tries to dig and tries to get more information. And the messenger says, no, that's all I'm meant to say. And even there, Swami plays that, Even Bharata says that, no, this is the duty of the messenger, I should not trouble him more. This is all he's meant to say, and he's not supposed to say more. And because I am troubled, I should not put the trouble on him and force him to, you know, transgress his duty.
The two messages that come forth strongly from that episode there is, one, you have to do your duty. And second, while doing your duty, ensure that you are not coming in the way of others doing their duty.
Right. You know, that is why Bharata actually restrains himself. He says, okay, I cannot force him to go beyond his duty, so let me do whatever it takes to get to Ayodhya as fast as possible.
If he wanted, he could have just said, I am your king, I am one of the princes, right. You just shut up and tell me what it is. But right. He doesn't do that. And even as he goes, Swami again says, how the dogs were howling, how even the animals in the kingdom was sad. That's what Swami said in the discourse clip. That is what Bharata sees right at the entrance of Ayodhya, the royal stables, and he sees that all the horses, all the elephants are sad, all the homes are locked, the shops are not open. And Swami says all the little details that add to the story, he says that the mango leaves which we put as toranams, is that? What do they call it in English? Right. I don't know.
Buntings.
The mango leaves, they've all dried up, which means that they have not been changed over the past 3-4 days. So, if such a thing has happened, you know, it is said that Ramarajya is a place where it is celebration every day. Nitya Kalyanam Pacha Toranam, as Swami would say. Every day is a festival. In such a situation, when you are seeing dried mango leaves, something really terrible has happened, and that is when he comes to know. And from his mother Kaikeyi, he gets to know only that part that Dasharatha is dead. And his father has died and he is very sorrowful. And another beautiful thing that Swami shows here is when he rushes to Kausalya, because that is the other mother, and he asks what has happened, because I don't know why he died, what happened. If he has died, I was not there, neither was Shatrughna there, so therefore they are very sorrowful. They are hoping that Rama will be there to give them some solace. And when they ask about Rama from Kaikeyi, Rama says, you know, Dasharatha has sent them off, and she starts wailing. So now they want to find out from Kausalya as to why is Rama sent off, where has he gone? He has gone to the forest, why has he not returned? And they go to Kausalya. The beautiful thing is what Kausalya says to them, you know, Kausalya doesn't even mention that your mother Kaikeyi is the root cause behind all this. That is so beautiful to see how Kausalya tells, you know, Bharata. She tells, oh son, be Bharata, seeing you I am feeling so happy because I feel I am seeing Rama. Don't know, it is just the emperor's decision that they should be sent to the forest. They have been sent to the forest. There is no use of grieving over that. Be bold. Don't get angry. You know, what benefit now if we lay blame and criticize or curse somebody? No, it's not the time to find fault with. It's just our destiny. I have to live with my sorrow, you have to live with yours. But we can't avoid this, and therefore we have to endure it. What can't be cured has to be endured. You are young, you are in the sunrise of your life, you are to rule the kingdom. So you should be strong and go ahead. This is what Rama would have liked, this is what everybody will advise you, and that is why you should go ahead and do the funeral. That is what she advises him, and that is why Bharata agrees to do the funeral. But at this point he gives a counter condition to not only Kausalya but to the other queens as well, because he warns them against Sati, right? That is what happens.
Right, he says that you should not immolate yourself in the funeral pyre which is meant for father. If you agree to that, that's when I will perform the rites of my father. And for some reason Swami gives a little bit of detail about that final funeral, where Swami mentions that Bharata does it so scrupulously that even Vasishtha did not expect that he will do it so, you know, well. When I was reading that part, you know, I couldn't help but think of, I think you should say it, we are right in the middle of it right now, the Indian batting order.
Cricket.
You know, when you have a very good batsman taken off, you have another good batsman coming by. You know, literally, Vasishtha was feeling something like that. You know, Rama was not there. Bharata is doing the duty which Rama was meant to do. You know, he was in a sense filled with thrill. I did not expect Bharata to be as scrupulous as I would have thought Rama would have been.
So he was as Rama himself.
Perfect as Rama would have been. But Bharata turned out to be a perfect replacement for Rama, because he did it, you know, even as well as Rama would have done it. And I feel that's why Swami is mentioning it there, because, you know, Swami is making a point that as a king, as a prince, as a son, Bharata was no less than Rama. you know, though we are in the middle of a story where Rama is the hero of the whole story, Swami is saying that as a personality, as an individual, Bharata was equally good. And that was why, you know, that is what we'll see even in the later episodes, the, you know, how the character of Bharata is shining forth.
The time in our studios is 1:57. Probably before we just conclude today's episode, we just mention one more point, that at the end of the funeral, Sage Vasishtha does one more thing, which is again very important for all of us to note. Till now, Bharata or Shatrughna have no idea that it's actually Kaikeyi who has sent, who has done all this, you know, who is the root cause.
Mm-hmm.
And it is the nobility of Kausalya and Sumitra that nobody mentions this at all. Nobody casts aspersion and blame on Kaikeyi. And it is here that after the funeral, there are all the vassal kings, because Dasharatha is an emperor. He has so many kings under him. So it is now time for Vasishtha to speak, and he speaks and talks to everybody and tells on how they must go ahead with equanimity, how they should administer, what should happen, all those he speaks. Apart from that, he also narrates the entire thing. He gives the correct version of the story as it has happened. This is to ensure that there is no rumor mongering, gossip mongering everywhere else. Otherwise, it will just be hearsay. So he gives the official version of what has actually happened, which is a very important practice, which is very important that it is done. You know, this is a lesson that we can learn, whether it's corporate life or office life, anywhere, that an elder who has the authenticity and the trust of the people gives out the details of what has happened. It is actually when Vasishtha is speaking that Bharata and Shatrughna get to know that Kaikeyi is responsible for sending Rama to the forest. That is when a volcano erupts within them. And what happens next, I think we shall take it up for a fortnight from now, when we have the next Ramakatha Rasavahini fortnight.
Very true. And even as we bid farewell to you, dear listeners, you know, this weekend is Ugadi, and the weekend after that is Ramanavami. And generally it is said that it is very, very, it's a very good thing to do, that you start from Ugadi till Ramanavami, you take up the reading of the Ramayana. And so maybe it's a reminder for you that in this week, of course, we will not be coming with the Ramakatha, but if you want, you can definitely make use of this opportunity starting this Ugadi till Ramanavami. Maybe you can read the Ramakatha Rasavahini, or if you are not very fond of reading, maybe what you could do is, you know, this 1996 Samukho series is such a beautiful series on the Ramayana. There are about 12 discourses. Maybe every day you can just pick up a discourse and listen to it. It's there on our website. You can download that whole series.
In case you are not comfortable navigating in the website, all you have to do is go to the homepage, radiosci.org. On the left, there's a button called Audio Search. In Audio Search, please click there, go there, select discourse and put the keyword as 1996. All the discourses of 1996 will list out.
Right.
From there, pick out the discourses in May 1996, the summer course discourses, each one, 12 of them in order. It would be really great if we spend this week every day listening to one discourse. The benefits will be immense, and I'm sure just like Prem and me are feeling Swami's presence in our life, Rama's presence in our life, feeling that surge of love and devotion to Rama and Sai Rama, all of us will be able to enjoy that. This is a really beautiful activity, suggested activity, that we can carry out from this weekend to the next weekend. With that, dear listeners, we take your leave. Ugadi is on Saturday, reminding you again. Hope you have a wonderful week filled with Rama. By the end of Ramanavami, the week after that, we'll be again taking up Ramakatha Rasavahini. It is indeed a beautiful opportunity that Swami has gifted us to make our life itself a Vahini of the Ramakatha, a flow of this nectar story of Ramayana. We leave you with this song and with our gratitude to Swami for giving us this opportunity. On the other side of this, you will be greeted by Brother Chandu with his segment Love to Love.
दशरथ राम जानकी राम दशरथ राम जानकी राम मारुति सेवित मनोभिरा मारुति सेवित मनोभिरा सीता